is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful day.
And welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom, and I'm at the helm of a team of knowledge and objectivity, of passion and considered opinion, in the form of Jay, Lauren, Connor, Paul Mack, Nick and Ben, who we've pinched selfishly from the Arsenal Brothers podcast. All that, and then there's Dave, who just pushed an entire donut into his unshaven face. You're right, my man. Hey, is it hunger or an audition for Britain's Got Talent? It's hard to tell. Well, the normal balance of the universe has been restored and everything is as it should be. I've been to the doctors and have been diagnosed with extreme smugness disorder and an acute case of euphoria and exaggerated grinning since the North London Derby. On the menu tonight, the North London Derby Part 3. The girls did their stuff in an exhilarating match and the under-18 showed up to dish out a spanking. So it was over to the seniors in the Premier League to show their credentials at the Emirates. Connor reports on the game in all its glory with every minute detail in Gonna Get Into It and highlights all the key aspects. Lauren brings us up to speed with the Champions League qualifier against Ajax in the WSL, which was at times a bit of a nail-biter and required the talents of one Vivienne Miedema. That's in a second helping of Gonna Get Into It. I'm in the gun room with Jay, Lauren, Paul Mack and Ben from the Arsenal Brothers podcast to dissect the match from the first kick to the final whistle. And we ask, what's your claim to fame supporting Arsenal? Did you once rub elbows with a player? Join in the celebrations after the historic 89 victory in North London. Were you a mascot or were you sunning yourself on a far-flung sandy beach somewhere when Arsene Wenger rocked up in his Speedos? Ooh, what a vision.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
The North London Derby head-to-head. Arsenal have won 68. There have been 47 draws and Spurs had won 55 prior to this match. Arsenal goals 263, Spurs goals 234. In terms of club success, Arsenal lead Spurs by quite some distance for both league titles, 13-2, and major trophies won overall, which is 31-17. Just two of Spurs' major honours have come in the last 31 years. With both of those coming in the League Cup, 1998-99 and 2007-2008. While Arsenal have won four major titles since Spurs last won a trophy, all of them FA Cups, a competition that they have won more than any other club 14 times. Arsenal have finished above Spurs in the league pyramid in 67 different seasons since the first campaign together in the EFL 1908-1909, with 21 of these coming consecutively between 1995-96 and 2015-2016, the longest run of supremacy either way between the clubs in league history. That's courtesy of theanalyst.com. Right, let's go to Connor with his report in Gonna Get Into It.
Derby day delight, wasn't it? The first North London derby of the season on Saturday afternoon, and what a way to beat our rivals yet again. It was almost exactly a year to the day that Arteta's men beat Spurs by exactly the same scoreline on our turf. But this 3-1 victory perhaps tasted that extra little bit sweeter as we moved 4 points clear of third place Spurs and maintained our 1-point lead over City at the top of the Premier League. Thomas Partey scored an absolute screamer. Granit Xhaka scored once again, and we pretty much produced an almost inch-perfect performance. bar Xhaka's hesitance and Gabriel's rashness that led to Richarlison winning the visitors a penalty. It was one-way traffic for the majority of the derby in Arsenal's favour, particularly in that second half. Yes, Conte's men weren't helped by Emerson Royale's moment of sheer madness on the hour mark, but even if it had been 11v11 for the remaining half an hour, we were in absolute control at that point, 2-1 up, and by far the hungrier of the two sides. Team news then, and Alexander Zinchenko was fit enough for a place in Arteta's starting 11 once again, as the Spaniard could, arguably for the first time in a few weeks, pick his strongest starting 11 when he needed it the most. We were also boosted by the welcome and timely return of captain Martin Odegaard, who came in for Fabio Vieira. We absolutely dominated the first half, particularly the opening 30 minutes. Gabriel Martinelli's well-struck volley cannoning off the post with just 2 minutes on the clock. Moments later, Saka found Xhaka with a beautiful cross, and Xhaka's flick went just wide. It really was all Arsenal, and we got a reward in the 20th minute, with Thomas getting the party started. Saka drifted infield before finding Ben White on the edge of the box. Nothing really looked on, but White's layoff was superbly struck by Thomas Partey, who curled in beautifully into the top corner. It was the Ghanaian's 65th effort from outside the box since joining the Gunners. Against the run of play, though, Spurs were gifted a penalty 10 minutes later. Son and Richarlison led a counter-attack, and all seemed to be dealt with when Saliba headed Richarlison's cross into the path of Granit Xhaka. The Swiss international, though, dilly-dallied on the ball on the edge of his own penalty area, which put Gabriel in an awkward position as Richarlison nipped in. Gabriel was rash, though, lunging in on the former Everton man for a stonewall penalty. Harry Kane stepped up and scored his 14th goal against the Gunners, stretching his record as the man to score the most Premier League goals against Arsenal. It was the England striker's 7th penalty scored in a North London derby. Kane almost grabbed a second moments later, but failed to take advantage of our sudden nervousness, heading straight at Ramsdale before Jesus shot straight at Lloris from close range after a trademark solo run. Half time then, it was one apiece. Despite our dominance, Arsenal won, Tottenham won at the break, but that really was one of Arsenal's most impressive first half performances of the season so far. Huge credit to Arteta and his half-time team talk. Whatever he said to our boys, it certainly worked, as we came roaring out of the blocks at the start of the second half. We deservedly retook the lead in the 49th minute. Saka jinking inside from the right caused trouble, as his eventual shot was parried and fumbled by Lloris, who couldn't hold on to Cristian Romero's inadvertent clearance towards the French goalkeeper, and that allowed Gabriel Jesus to poach home his 5th Premier League goal of the season. Jesus had 2 more decent opportunities before an already struggling Spurs side were down to 10 men. Martinelli was going nowhere on the left-hand side and was actually carrying the ball back towards his own goal when a reckless Emerson Royale lunged studs first on the back of our Brazilian winger's leg. Conte was furious, but it's one of the clearest red cards you're likely to see this season. We killed off the game then in the 67th minute. Martinelli drove infield before getting to the edge of the box. He then cleverly left it for Xhaka, who took a touch inside the box before sweeping brilliantly home to send the home fans into absolute goosebump-creating pandemonium. Sensational stuff. Granit Xhaka's 2nd league goal of the season. What a season he's having. This newfound, more attacking role is nothing short of a game-changing revelation. And maybe even the great Arsene Wenger will be kicking himself, asking himself why didn't he see this potential in Xhaka, who only ever really scored long-range screamers before this season. Tottenham's unbeaten start to the Premier League then came crashing down at the Emirates as we made it 7 wins from 8 to stay at the summit of the table. Interesting stats from the North London derby then. Have a listen to this. Spurs have now been shown 5 red cards at the Emirates, the most they've received at any Premier League stadium. Arsenal have now won each of their last 3 Premier League home games against Tottenham for the first time since September of 2013. Tottenham, meanwhile, have now failed to win any of their last 12 Premier League visits to Arsenal, drawn 4, lost 8, which is currently their longest ongoing run in the competition. And what about Mikel Arteta? More plaudits for the Spanish manager. He is just the 3rd manager in the club's history to win each of his first 3 home games against Tottenham, after George Morel did it between 1909 and 1911, and Terry Neill between 1977 and 1979. Only Erling Haaland has been directly involved in more Premier League goals than Gabriel Jesus this season. Haaland has been involved in 12, while Jesus has been involved in 8, while only Andrei Arshavin had more involvements in his first 8 appearances for us in the competition. Arshavin was involved in 9 goals in his first 8 league games. The perfect way then to warm up for another crunch home clash in the Premier League next weekend, as we host Out of Sorts Liverpool next Sunday afternoon. Before that, we host Norwegian side Bodø Glimt on Thursday night in our second game in Group A's Europa League group stage. 3 home games in the space of 7 days. I think anyway, if we can manage to beat Tottenham and Liverpool back to back in the space of a week, then I think even after just 9 league games, it is early, but I think then people will start to seriously get behind those title contenders' claims. An injury to Erling Haaland and things could get very interesting indeed, you feel. Well, there is still Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva and Phil Foden, to mention a few, but you know, we're to dream about the what-ifs every now and again, isn't it? Anyway, Derby Day Glory. Let's say that again. Derby Day Glory for the Arsenal on Saturday. It finished Arsenal 3, Tottenham Hotspur 1.
Time for Lauren to deliver her report on the finely poised return leg of the Champions League qualifier against Ajax. It needed something special. Did we get it? Of course we did. He's going to get into it.
Hello and welcome to this week's Arsenal Women's Update. As always, I'm Lauren and I'm talking about Arsenal Women. Get used to it. Before the women broke for the international break, we had one more very important game to play. Flying high off the back of our historic 4-0 victory over Spurs, yeah, I'm still talking about that, I'm not going to stop, our place in the Champions League Final 12 was at stake. So our first leg against Ajax was a rather disappointing display, with a lot of key players not performing to their capacity. Leah Williamson, for example, who so rarely has a poor game, looked a little bit off the pace. In a North London Derby pre-match interview, she did admit that she was feeling mentally drained after captaining the Lionesses over the summer, which might explain it. The first game ended 2-2, meaning it was crucial that Arsenal came away with a win to ensure European football this season. Head coach Jonas Eidevall said in his pre-match press conference that basically losing wasn't an option. The plan was to get Champions League football, and that's what they were going to do. So I'll just briefly touch on the match before I get into our Champions League group. It was very similar to the first leg. It was tough, very tough. First half, it looked like it was going to be very difficult for Arsenal to break down their defence, despite Katie McCabe and Ford continuing on with their blistering form at the moment. They both looked very hungry whenever the ball fell to their feet. Both teams had chances in the first half, but not much really to discuss. It was a miserable, rainy night with lightning overhead, and the question was, could Arsenal do it on a cold September night away to Ajax? Okay, that's a bit Stoke-like, but they were very Stoke-like in their approach. And by that, I mean Stoke of the early 2010s Premier League era. Okay. After 30 minutes had been played, centre-back Raffaele had to be subbed off for what was later confirmed as a fractured foot. That will have her sidelined for several weeks, and we wish her nothing but a very, very speedy recovery. This was as a result of a challenge from Grant of Ajax. Ruben Moy came on at centre-back and she played very well. It was a great opportunity for her, having recently been dropped from the Lionesses squad for the next set of upcoming friendlies, despite her involvement in the Euros this summer. Similarly, Beth Mead, who was a surprising sub for this game, came on in the second half but was on the receiving end of a nasty blow to the cheek. As a precaution, she was taken off suspected concussion. I'll speak a little bit more on that after, but fear not, it was not all doom and gloom. After all, we do have Super Miedema. The Dutch native found the back of the net in the 51st minute, scoring an absolute screamer. Although it has been a bit of a tough start for her this season, she is proving why she is so crucial to this team. The opportunity came from an Ajax throw in their own half. Ford pounced on a very poor pass back to the thrower, putting a ball into McCabe, who got a great touch on it to feed the ball to Miedema, who was given enough space to shift the ball and shoot from just outside the D, slotting the ball effortlessly into the bottom corner. 1-0 to the Arsenal, and that's how it finished, 3-2 on aggregate. So maybe the game lacked goals, but it had drama aplenty. As I mentioned, Mead came off following a nasty headbutt to the cheek. It was for sure unintentional, but it was very dangerous. She went down, she got a bang, and she was down, I'd say, for about 5 minutes. However, since the Gunners had used their three subs already, we were forced to see the game out with 10 players on the pitch. Lina Herting, our summer signing, was ready to come on, but she was denied the opportunity as we were refused a concussion sub. It has since raised a lot of questions, people criticising UEFA for not giving teams the option of using a concussion sub if a player's health is at risk. Claims have also been made that in the future, clubs might risk their players' health if the proper measures aren't in place. So we'll have to monitor that and see what is done in the future. But thank goodness Beth Mead was able to walk off the pitch herself and she seems to be doing okay. And perhaps the most perplexing situation of the whole day revolved around the goals. Yes, the goalposts. Apparently, a non-playing member of the Arsenal team noticed that they were able to touch the crossbar when they stood in the goal, which they normally couldn't do. So upon investigation, it was discovered that the goals were 10 centimetres smaller than usual. Idaval said afterwards, playing against a big club like Ajax, where we had to measure the goals before the game, I've never experienced anything like it. Crazy stuff, really, really crazy stuff. But Arsenal came out on top and we were into the Champions League. So what does our group look like? So the draw took place Monday, the 3rd of October. Arsenal were seated in Pot C alongside Prague, Bayern Munich and Paris Saint-Germain. We were drawn into Group C alongside Lyon, last season's winners and all-time greatest team to ever play in the Champions League, to be honest, Juventus and Zurich. Arsenal and Juventus both reached the quarterfinals of the competition last season. And we've also faced Zurich before, albeit it was 2008 and we came away as 7-2 victors with none other than Kim Little getting a hat-trick. Could we see the same from her again? Who knows? Chelsea, the only other English team, were drawn into Group A, potentially the group of death. They are alongside Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, and I'm going to attempt to say this now. You're going to have to bear with me. It is Vlasnia, Albanian team. I believe it's the first Albanian team to reach the Women's Champions League Final 12. So how does that look? Tough group. But we have to remember the Champions League group stages only has 12 teams in it, four groups of four. So all games are going to be tough. There's no easy draw. And all games will be available free of charge on either DAZN or YouTube. So there's no excuses not to watch. Also, Arsenal are going to play all of their home games in the Emirates Stadium. Get down and support. We saw how great it was at the North London Derby. Let's do it again for Europe. That's all for me this week, and I'll be back next week, probably giving you a few updates on how the international break is going, keeping an eye out on the Arsenal women, and just taking a breath before we have a mental, it's absolutely insane what's going on in October. So if I'm a bit quiet next week, please forgive me. But that's all for me. Hope you enjoyed, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Right, what's your claim to fame when it comes to Arsenal? Well, James Miller, who I met on Facebook, was fortunate enough to be a steward when Thierry Henry performed that iconic knee slide after scoring a brilliant solo goal against Tottenham in 2002. If you look it up on your search bar, you'll see Henry with his hands by his side, and there's a picture of James in his high-vis jacket, a picture that's been seen by millions in a standout and a historic moment in the club's history. James said, "I was in the southwest corner watching the game in between watching the away fans when Henry got the ball and started running at them. I said to the guy next to me, he's on one and he's not stopping. When he scored, the ground erupted and the track stewards took their positions. Originally, the away fans were dumbstruck. Then they went into one. I turned to see what had upset them and there he was. Not allowed to show any emotion. I said to myself, get in there, Thierry, but you can go away now because I've got to deal with the onslaught from the aggression. Oh my God, the crying and whinging from them afterwards, demanding the police arrest him for incitement. The only time we had more fun was Sheffield United in the FA Cup. If that was me, I would have it everywhere. It'd be on t-shirts, it'd be on letterheads, business cards. I'd have some sort of transfer and have Henri on the bonnet. If that was me, I'd have it on the front of the house. It'd be on a hologram like you have on Big Ben on New Year's Eve. They put some sort of hologram on there. I'd ring people up, tell them about it, put the phone down, like I normally do. You name it, I'd have it. James, what a claim to fame that is. You should be making the max out of that, James, honestly. I know he hasn't, but I'd have it. Oh, I would. Wouldn't you? Yeah. Oh, Mrs.
It's time to enter the gun room for a natter.
Hello, welcome to the gun room. Look at this. It's like Celebrity Squares, isn't it? Cast your mind back. You might be old enough to remember that. With me, I've got Nick from the Arsenal Brothers podcast. How are you, Nick?
Hi, Tom.
That I'm was great. Your cue, Nick. Keep up. And we've got Lauren, one of the Pocketeers.
Good evening. Good morning, whenever you're listening.
Mac is back, Mr. Mac. How are you, Mac?
Fine, Tom. Good to be back as well.
Excellent. And Jay is bringing up the rear. How are you, Jay?
Very well, thank you.
Good. We're all buzzed up, Paul. It's been a massive, massive result. Well, it's been a series of massive results, which we'll get into. Obviously, WSL, we did Tottenham there. The under-18s have done Tottenham as well. And we bought this home. And I've got to say, we covered every base, didn't we, last pod? Penalties, sending off, the score we got right. We managed to bluff it out somewhere. Paul, did you see it?
Yeah, I watched it all, Tom. I thought it was an entertaining game from start to finish. I thought beforehand, I really considered this to be quite a big test for Arsenal's resilience, you know, coming on the back of the defeat at Manchester United. And with it being a derby, there's that added pressure as well. Also, that kind of a business that still exists from last season in terms of losing the Champions League place to Tottenham. So there was quite a bit at stake there. But I was very, very... very taken with the way Arsenal played. It was kind of typical tactics this season. First 10 minutes, blitz the opposition, hit them with everything, then sit back a bit, get the goal, go ahead. And I thought the first half performance was absolutely tremendous. That backflip from Zaka in the first half, where he tried to flick it into the back of the net, such a virtuoso performance from him. I was getting a little bit more concerned with the kind of defensive mayhem that led to a Tottenham penalty, because really that should have been dealt with by about three or four different people before he even got to that stage, to Gabriel giving the penalty away. But the second half, you can see the newfound self-belief and confidence in Arsenal. I think an Arsenal two or three seasons ago might not have gone on to win that game. They would have come out lacking a bit of confidence for the second half, but I thought the crowd really got behind them. I think the home support's been a big factor for Arsenal this season in terms of pushing the team onwards and upwards. And once the second goal went in, which is just a classic poacher's goal from Jesus, you know, he's there, he's waiting for the mistake, and he pounces. And once it was 2-1, that was it. That savage tackle from Royale. And after that, only one team was going to win it. What a left-foot finish was that to seal the game. So, fantastic win for Arsenal. Thoroughly deserved. I think, you know, answer any doubts that might have emerged after the performance of Man United. And winning 7 out of the first 8 games, you know, that's top of the table form, isn't it?
Well, we've got a baffling 9 games in a month. It's an absolutely horrendous situation. Are we really equipped for this, Jay? Are we going to get a little bit strung out with all the domestic competitions, the FA Cup, the Europa League? What's your thoughts on it?
I think most teams are in the same position as us. Obviously, you can't legislate for any injuries. You know, your fingers crossed, you get through the difficult spells. And obviously, it's the part of the manager's job to juggle certain players, certain positions. But I mean, at the moment, the team picks itself for the league games, doesn't it? And we've got, you know, really strong players that haven't had much game time at all. So they're going to get plenty. You think of players like Tomiyasu, especially, who last season, especially for the first half of the season, was absolutely superb. He's obviously going to get game time, and Nketiah and a number of others. So I mean, everybody, all the teams at the top of the league, they're all involved. Other than Brighton, they're all involved in European football. So it's how well and how lucky and fortunate you are if you manage to get through it this period without any injuries, and how you manage to come out the other end. And you know, it's going to be tricky, but I mean, I'm confident. You have to be confident. Even, you know, the first Europa League game against Zurich, we looked pretty good, and there was a lot of changes in that game. So I think we'll be fine. Fingers crossed we don't get any injuries.
Bodo Glimt. I thought it was a Lord of the Rings character. Nick, do you know anything about them? You heard anything about them? It should be a walk in the park, shouldn't it?
I mean, it should. I mean, they're all the way up in the Arctic Circle, so that away trip will be something. But I know this week we're at home, so I mean, this should be one we take care of. I mean, this should be comfortably be a team that we can rotate, and especially at home. I don't see us having any issues with, you know, like Jay said, I mean, especially having guys like Tomiyasu and Nketiah chomping at the bit, ready to play. I think we should be okay. They've had some solid players come through, but they don't stay there very long. So I think we should be okay.
Lauren, our Europa League adventure, where are our priorities this season? Obviously, we're in contention for the league at present, and we're enjoying all that. Sorry, Paul, we're going to rub that in. But what are our priorities? Is this a big one?
It's interesting. I think we're in a similar situation to where we were last season. Okay, it's a bit early yet to be saying it, but I think we're overachieving in terms of what the plan was. I don't think we were never meant to, if you will, challenge for, you know, the league. Again, it's very early. I'm not saying we are, but I think we're in a position that no one really anticipated. I think it was Ramsdale was on, he does a million podcasts a week. He was on one anyway, and he was saying that Europa League is the focus, and that's what the team wants. They want Europa League and probably a domestic cup. I think that's probably where the focus is going to be, because, you know, I'm sure we're going to get on to City after. They're looking unstoppable. They are looking unstoppable. So I think it would be, given, you know, I don't want to be too critical, but given the fact that we are still a relatively young, unproven team, I think Europa League is probably the best bet to focus on and see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Lauren. We are probably a season and a half in front of where we should be.
Exactly.
So whatever we achieve is really a bonus. Right then, Paul, Stan Kroenke is understood to be exploring the possibility of acquiring more clubs in Brazil, Belgium and Portugal. If you're committed to Arsenal, I don't mind you investing in another club and stuff like that. But I think we're on really dodgy ground here, starting to buy other clubs. Where's your priorities? These sports franchises are starting to grow tentacles, and it's all going to get a bit messy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate concern, because you want your club owner to be investing any money he has to spare in the club rather than gambling on franchises. And it seems to be, you know, the new kind of multi-millionaire's way of doing things, collect the savings of clubs in different countries. And so if you don't have success in one country, you always fall back with backing a team in another country. So, yeah, I mean, I would want the owner of any club, I suppose, to be totally committed to my club and not be distracted by interest with other clubs. I think it's an increasing worry, the way that a number of Premier League clubs now have got various franchises across Europe, across the States, and Asia, and further afield. So it's definitely something that it's a growing trend. I think it's going to impact upon the club, the one that they're supposed to be in charge of. And isn't it easy to take your eye off things when you look after four or five football clubs rather than one? So, I mean, if I was an Arsenal fan,
The thing is, Paul, he had his problems, didn't he, with Arsenal to start off with?
Yeah,
bringing in the wrong people, employing the wrong people, putting in the wrong set of systems. So surely he's learned his lesson. Surely.
Well, I mean, you know him better than me, but I think as well, you know, you could take a more positive view and say, well, maybe he's going to make all those mistakes with the franchise clubs and make his mistakes there, and then that'll be for the benefit of Arsenal. I don't know, but the whole concept of a franchise club, it just really doesn't do it for me.
Nick, obviously he's US-based and he's a familiar face out there. He's not a familiar face in North London, I can tell you that. It's Invisible Stan. It's like the book, Where's Wally? If they did one about where's Stan Kroenke, we'd buy it. What's his reputation out in America like? Because he seems like he's all bells and whistles out there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Silent Stan moniker isn't as evident out here. Out here, he's more known as a winner. I mean, just winning the Super Bowl with the Rams. I'm trying to think, he owns a multitude of teams out here that have been traditionally pretty successful as well. So, I think him owning Arsenal, especially with Josh, his son, having more of a day-to-day part in it, week to week, I guess. You still don't see him much, but he definitely has more of his fingers in that. I don't really mind Stan looking into other clubs, because to me, I see them more as investments, to where, or I see him with the Rams and Arsenal. It's, you know, these are his premier crown jewels, to where everybody's going to know about both of them, whereas the other clubs, they're going to make him money, because whatever he buys them at, by the time he gets to the point where he sells them, he's going to have made a significant amount of money. And part of me sees it as a positive as well, to where maybe we can use these clubs. I don't want to say feeder clubs, but Manchester City's done the same thing. They have clubs all across the world and use them to send players on loan, use them to monitor players, and just use them to build funds. And it's a way to ultimately help the parent club. So I'd be kind of interested to see what becomes of it. I don't think we'll see the fruits of it right away, but I think having a system, especially if they're somewhat connected, which I'd like to think they would be connected to the main club, being Arsenal, I think it ultimately could help out.
Lauren, let's bring you in for the latest on the WSL, including the deadlock in Spain. That's a bit of a mess, isn't it? Bring us up to speed on that one.
The squad was released and it was looking completely different. I had a bit of a facelift. So nothing has been done there.
15 players, isn't it? 15,
I think it was 15 players were dropped, including Alexia Putellas, who was injured at the moment with ACL, Spain's best player, Barcelona's best player. I don't think she was one of the players to express it, but she did back the other players who expressed dissatisfaction with the management. So yeah, it's not looking great there. Really not looking great in the run-up to World Cup for them. So
you saw his press conference, didn't you, Lauren? Was he a bit out there? Was he a bit bats in the belfry?
It was bizarre. It was very strange. So I didn't watch it, but I was looking at a lot of quotes and I was getting them in Spanish and English. But it was the most bizarre thing was almost every sentence that he said began with I. There was no mention of the team. It was all about him. You know, it was weird. It was very weird. You know, I don't see it resolving unless they get rid of him. Because, I mean, how valuable is the manager when your best 15 players aren't there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't look like they're budging. So we'll have to wait and see.
Monitor. Interesting. We'll keep tabs on that. Right, we've got a busy, a bit of a layoff now, haven't we? Then we've got a busy period in the WSL. We've also got the BBC Women's Footballer of the Year 2022. Winner announced on the 9th of November. Do you want to quickly run us through who we've got and who's likely to win, Lauren?
Absolutely. So obviously I'm going to start with Beth Mead. We all know the name, love the name. She's up against Sam Kerr of Chelsea, Australian forward, Alexia Popp, who we also know from the Euros this summer, the German forward, Alexia Putellas, who I just mentioned. She is out injured with ACL, I think it was rupture. She's out for a good 10, 12 months. But in saying that, she's the person who's after picking up Ballon d'Or and UEFA Player of the Season. And we also have the only defender on the list, who is Wendy Renard of Lyon, so the French defender, who was a standout player in the Euros as well, I have to say. So look, I mean, if you were to pull together a five-a-side of the best women in the world, there they are there, all the names, all the names are there for you. To be honest, I think Beth Mead does have a very good chance. Why do I say that? Because one, she's the only English player on the list. It's the BBC Awards and they showed all of the Euros. Okay, so as amazing as Sam Kerr is, probably the next contender on that list. We didn't see her in the Euros. Obviously, she's Australian. So I think she has a good chance. Why not? You know, everyone can vote. You go on to the BBC now and get your votes in for her. So, yeah, I think she does have a good chance. But again, any of those names are worthy winners.
Let's get on to that North London derby. Going into the match, the pundits and everybody else kind of didn't really take us that seriously. But we came up trumps, Jay. What did you make of the performance?
Paul touched on it earlier on. We started the game like we have every game this season in quick tempo, dictating the play. And you could tell Spurs were basically going to sit back. You know, I mean, how many times, I'm sure we all did the same. We all counted. There was a number of occasions in that first half, especially where Harry Kane was the most advanced forward player for Spurs, and he was, you would say, in a defensive midfielder role for Spurs. They were drilled, they were told to sit back and expect an onslaught, which is what we've done in each of the games. So it was good passing. It was, you know, we were creating chances. I was obviously before the game, you know, this is the derby. It's all about the result more than anything else. You don't, you want a good performance, but you also, you're absolutely scared shitless of losing. You would take a grubby 0-0, but I mean, the atmosphere seemed great inside the stadium, and that definitely helped the players. And I mean, we dominated the game, and we haven't, I mean, even after, you know, in the days afterwards, we haven't been given the credit that we deserved for that performance, because before the game, even though we were top of the league, all I was reading was, you know, Conte this, Conte that, the strides that they have made, rather than the improvement that we've made. And like Lauren said, you know, last season we overachieved, and some people, you know, I was satisfied with the fifth place. Obviously disappointed we didn't get Champions League, but this season it has been, you know, we've gone up another two or three levels, and you know, all through that first half, you know, obviously there was the wobble midway through the half where, you know, Spurs got a little bit more into it. And like Paul said, again, we could have dealt with the penalty a lot better. You know, Ramsdale made a great save from Richarlison earlier on. But all in all, you know, we absolutely battered Spurs in a similar way that we battered Man United. You know, we smothered them. We were quicker in the pass. You know, we were creating the chances. And I mean, you know, Harry Kane, one of the most, you know, feared strikers, you know, either side of him, you've got Son and Richarlison. And I mean, they didn't get a sniff really throughout the whole 90 minutes. You know, like I said, they had that little spell. But I mean, our defence, you know, Saliba again. I mean, he was nutmegging their players. You know, it was a great performance. It was a performance, again, just to, you know, reiterate the work that Mikel has done, you know, in building the bridges with the fans as well. I mean, some of the scenes, you know, you must have all seen them as well. Some of the scenes of the supporters going absolutely bonkers, you know, that there's a real connect with the fans and the players. And I mean, great result. Like I said earlier, it's all about the result, but to also get the 3 points and to get the performance as well. And we're still flying under the radar. Nobody's talking about us for the, you know, in a title race, and that's fine with me. Don't get me wrong, but we are doing so well at the moment. And that performance against a good Spurs side, but you know, we brushed them aside. Absolutely. And absolutely. I'm still buzzing now, you know, unbelievable. You know, it's just superb.
I tell you, it's an incredible feeling. Last season when they beat us, it was really hard to put the audio pod together because you want to sound like upbeat and all the rest of it. And I just couldn't do it. I put it to one side for 4 days. I couldn't manage it. But this was a whole different thing. Nick, what did you make of? We were talking last pod, and we said about Spurs. I'm doing it again. Spurs negativity, because Conte has instilled this sort of sit back, wait, and then counter. They've been very boring this season, but I was really surprised that he didn't even bring it.
Yeah, I was really relying on that to work. And when you do that, you're only going to get a handful of chances and you have to take them. And they had their one that Ramsdale saved tremendously. They had their penalty, and I can't think of too much outside of that. And when you're under just constant pressure and constant attack, I mean, it was amazing seeing, I mean, just like you said, Jay, seeing how far Harry Kane was back, seeing how far our back line was up. I mean, Saliba was confronting Kane halfway in their own defending half. I mean, they just couldn't get out, and it just recycled and kept going. And, you know, every game we've had this year, we've deserved to win. We've been in control. Zinchenko coming in, I know he didn't have a tremendous game, but it showed me how Mikel wanted to play. And, you know, there were shouts for Tierney coming in, and he said, no, we're going to play how we want to play, with that five in the back, with the two and then the three, or the three and then the two, and then the pretty much front line of five. And Ben White was really an X factor when he came into that, creating pretty much a front line of six. And The Athletic, Michael Cox had a great article. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but does a great job analyzing Ben White and how the first half he supported, which he had the assist for Partey's goal. And in the second half, he started to overlap, and that allowed Saka to cut in and get his shot for the Jesus goal. And then he crossed it in for Jesus' header. So, I think we talked a lot last year about Mikel's adherence to make changes. And these weren't necessarily personnel changes, but just tweaks, and really helped us really have a chokehold of the game. And what a great goal to kill off the game. I think Tottenham can look at this game and say they scored a long-range, low-percentage goal. They scored off a terrible keeper error, and then there was a red card and the game was done. So I think we talk about us not getting the credit that we want and deserve from this game. You can point at all those things and say, well, it was a one-off, or they didn't fully deserve that. But I think when you look at the performance as a whole, they had a very limited chance of ever coming out of that with 3 points, let alone a draw. I mean, at halftime, I was pretty upset that we were level, because we deserved more. And I was just wondering, how long is it going to take for that breakthrough and that quick goal? Got the place jumping again, and I think we were going to take care of them, red card or not. And that was kind of
which you predicted, guys. You predicted red cards and penalties, and I was like, bloody hell, they were right, Paul, Conte, after the game, he accused Mikel Arteta of making excuses last time round, of too much moaning, concentrate on your own team and all that nonsense. This time round, he said the red card killed the game. I don't think that's accurate, do you? It was dead before then. They weren't actually playing with any purpose.
No, I mean, I think, as I said at the start there, Tom, I think by that stage, the momentum was with Arsenal. They got the 2-1 lead. They were pressing for the third goal. And as Jay has pointed out, Nick as well, the Tottenham's tactics are to sit back and hit you on the break. I think Arteta got the organisation spot on in Arsenal's midfield and Arsenal's defence to limit the opportunity for Tottenham to do that. And once that plan fails for Conte, he's really struggling for a plan B. As you can see by the fact he threw four substitutes on, that's a sign of a manager running out of ideas, making a desperate gamble to try and change things. I mean, at the time, it's like most of the things when you see it again in slow motion. At the time, I didn't think it was that bad a challenge, but when I saw it again in slow motion, it's a vicious challenge, it's an unnecessary challenge, and basically that bit of rashness has sent Tottenham down to 10 men. So any chance, however remote it was, of coming back into the game disappeared at that moment for them. I don't make Emerson Royale as a defender particularly. I think he's very uncoordinated, he's very cumbersome, and he doesn't inspire confidence from my perspective. But yeah, the sending off to me had absolutely nothing to do with the outcome of the game. Arsenal were by far the better team. They had the momentum. And Jay made the point about the connection between the crowd and the club. And you could really feel that in the second half, that the crowd was willing them to push forward. And you sometimes reach a stage as a football club where the results and the crowd, the results get the crowd on board. And then the crowd is prepared to accept the odd dip in form if they see the players given everything. I think Arsenal have kind of reached that balance at the moment whereby they might have another, they might have a home defeat coming up, hopefully not next weekend for obvious reasons. And then you kind of hope that then the resilience of the crowd will match the resilience of the team as well, that that'll help push all Arsenal forward. I mean, if you're looking for an optimistic kind of viewpoint here, I'm just kind of thinking back to Leicester winning the title in 15-16 when no one gave them a chance. And what really helped them was the blistering start to the season when suddenly they found themselves at the top. They were guessing 2 points ahead, 3 points ahead. Then they're going to the rivals, guessing draws, guessing wins. And suddenly, before you know where they are, that you know the walking where the league title lands. If you start off with 7 wins in 8 games, you're giving yourself a massive chance of being in at the shouts at the end. Now, it may not continue. There's a congested fixtures coming up. But you know, if you look at who are the main threats at the moment, well, realistically, there's only one threat at the moment, and that's Man City. I don't see any of the teams in the top half of the table being a threat to Arsenal at the moment. So if the consistency can be maintained, I think Arteta's improved as a tactical manager and organiser in the last 3 seasons as well. So from your perspective, I'd be very optimistic. I think I mentioned before, maybe like a strength and depth for the forwards may cost you if Jesus was to get a serious injury. But, you know, at that stage, yeah, are you?
Lauren, we're going to just go back to that sending off. I mean, Jonathan Pearce on Match of the Day. I had to watch Match of the Day as well. I had to milk the teats of this victory. I had to have it all.
I've watched the highlights every day flavor. Since. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know.
I get enough of it.
But Jonathan Pearce said to Antonio Conte, "It was a soft tackle. I thought it was an ankle breaker."
Watching
I don't know
it,
what he I, was watching. Perhaps yeah. he was turned round.
Yeah, I don't. I think initially when the red card was given, it kind of took me aback a bit. And then once I saw it again, I thought, okay, yeah, completely fair. But there was also another challenge, which I don't think was picked up, and it was on Kane. I think it was well into the 80th minute, but I think he kicked Gabriel twice. I can't remember exactly when that was.
Gabriel was on the floor,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, floating around on Twitter.
Yeah.
So do you know what, like, if they're still going to continue on like that after getting a red card, those sorts of red cards need to be given to prevent players from thinking they can get away with things like that, you know? So I don't think, maybe it was a soft, you could say, you know, I've seen worse tackles with nothing given. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, maybe, but given the height of the game, given the position that Spurs were in 2-1 down, they could have done anything. So for the player's safeties, it was 100% the right call.
It was a studs up. So for me, it was a no-brainer. As soon as I saw it, I thought he's bang in trouble. He's got to go. Right, let's get on with the juicy bits. The juicy bits. As you say, Ramsdale made an early save from Richarlison. That kind of set the stall out there because had that gone in, we would have had a kind of different game for a spell. 20 minutes on the clock. Thomas Partey scores a goal. And he means it. It's not Rose Ed. Jay, walk us through it.
Oh, I mean, what a goal.
Ding dong.
What a goal. Saka had the ball on the right side and he threw in a little dummy, which I loved. And Son completely bought it. I think it was Son anyway. He just rolled the ball to, is it Ben White? And then White to Partey. And I mean, there was a brilliant photo. The ball is a good 2 or 3 yards outside the post, and it comes back in. And I mean, that all of his shots that have gone into orbit, he's all is forgiven after that. You know, he was on the day, he was immense, wasn't he? Partey,
he was.
His best game for the club by a long way, and he's he's what a great shot, what a great goal. And it was great, you know, all of the goals, you know, it goes back to what I was saying about the connect and this, how likable this group are. You know, all the players, they're absolutely over the moon when they score. And I know it's a very obvious thing to say, but there doesn't seem much of many egos in that squad. You know, that you know, when the slow-mo's going by after, I think it was Shaka's goal, you've got like Zinchenko's on his knees and he's like, yeah, you know, all of the players, you know, Saliba, there's how many times this season has Saliba been photoed just going wild, you know, and he's only been with the squad for, you know, a short space of time. So, and obviously when Partey scored, Shaka was going absolutely crazy. So, I mean, a goal to just go wild over. I wish I was in the stadium. And again, those scenes behind the goal, you know, in the stands, all over the stadium, just superb, just superb.
I must have disturbed the neighbours. I've got to be honest, I screamed the place down. I think it was a bit of shock in there as well. Be honest, Jay, when that ball came from Ben White across, you were probably saying, pass it.
Yeah. But we'd had a few chances up to that point, hadn't we? I think, was it Jesus had hit the outside of the post, I think, yeah. And Martinelli had, I think, if I remember right, he shot one. And Lloris made a decent save. And I think Saka, there was a cross to the back post and Saka was off balance and he couldn't quite get his shot away. So we were, the pressure was building. But like I said earlier, Spurs were so deep that in the back of your mind, you know, especially with an Italian manager, you kind of think, are we going to be able to make the breakthrough? You know, Partey, although he has, you know, since signing for the club, he's not exactly, he's not, known for his long range efforts to hit the back of the net, but he's got a good shot on him. There has been times where he's gone close, hasn't there? So great goal. One of the goals, you know, we said last week, didn't we? Great goals of the North London Derby, and that will definitely be one for us to talk about for years to come. Absolutely.
Right on the list. Nick, what amazed me about that whole thing was Spurs were sitting so deep. You could see the space just opening up for that goal in particular, Saka to White and just across. There was buses of room there. It was just so unbelievable. And that was, I mean, the one thing you don't want to do to Arsenal is give them space and time, because that's been their bread and butter for years, going back to Wenger.
Yeah. If they had been doing their homework, surely the one guy they could give space to, though, is Thomas Partey when he's in a shooting position. So it sounds like, I don't think this question was ever asked, but you could see during Arteta's celebration, it seemed like it's something they were practicing. And I've thought for a while, you know, we're not traditionally a club that is known for their long-range goals. And I think to break down a team like this, something like this was maybe going to be on or going to take something like this for the breakthrough. And we're just talking about Saka, I mean, being double teamed about the entire game. Son was all the way back on him. So tell me, I mean, how much work he's doing defensively, what he can give going forward. And I saw a stat earlier today that says Granit Xhaka has more touches in the opposing box this season than Youngmin Son. And just talk about terrorist tactics. I mean, that having Son that far back defending is not going to lead you to many goals in defending like that. I mean, Saka with the quick pump fake, I mean, had both guys dancing and then he laid it off and White cleverly played it over. What a finish from Partey. I mean, that started way outside the post and came around and the limbs in the behind the goal were just unbelievable. Like Jay said, I mean, yeah, I mean, really coming back. And there was actually a clip going around. He did that in preseason. It was almost the identical move coming in from the right, and he first timed it and was very close. So, I mean, we're seeing the fruits of the labor at London Colney come through with the pattern play. And we're starting to see these similar movements, and it becomes second nature for these players to be in a position and see the space and take the space and take the chance. So Yeah, I mean, talking about memorable North London Derby goals, I mean, it's always better when you win, but what a way to start the game.
Paul, Richarlison got won a penalty. Gabriel involved in the tackle. It was a clumsy affair, but he's taken a lot of stick online and people are saying get rid of him. I mean, it's quite fickle, isn't it, this fan base? It's unbelievable. Some percentages of the Arsenal fan base are incredible. I thought tell me if I'm wrong, that Xhaka sort of fluffed up in the build-up to that. He could have got more involved. And Gabriel is a young defender. He's been doing a really, really good job. Spellbinding. Paul.
Yeah, I think also it has to be Charleston some credit. Obviously, I'm slightly biased here because he was such a massive player for us last season. But
what he's very good,
but what he's very good at doing is inviting challenges from opposition players, luring it into thinking they've got a chance of winning the ball and then kind of moving it away from them. So I think there's elements of that to the challenge as well. I think I said at the start of the pod, I think Ars had about three or four chances to get rid of that ball. It was almost an occasion where you almost thought, just launch it into Rose Ed, just clear it as far as you can. Don't try and play football here. You know, you're under pressure from the top.
Because we got it out once and it came back, didn't it? Unexpectedly. Yeah. You, what's that about? Get rid.
Well, it was Saliba's header, wasn't it? Saliba headed it clear. And as everyone said here, Jay, Lon and Nick, he had a fantastic game. He absolutely did. I thought the danger was over that stage. Obviously, Tottenham recovered it, got it back into the box again. But even at that time, I had about four or five defenders there, all in good position. And really, I think it just needs someone to take to be decisive and just say, right, no, this is an occasion to forget the football, just get rid of the ball, get rid of the danger, give the throwing away, reorganise and defend it. And I'm sure that's something Arteta would have noticed, would have picked up upon. I'm sure at the Colney training ground this week, whoever's doing the defensive coaching will be drilling the team. Look, if you have a similar situation in the past, don't give away, a penalty. Don't let the opposition back into the game, because the key to seeing out seasons is if you're ahead of the game, you've got to stay ahead and don't give away any easy opportunity.
I tell you, it was just so disappointing, wasn't it, as well, because we were all over them like a cheap suit, and then they managed to get that. And it's so frustrating because you think, oh, now we've got to start again. Lauren, 49 minutes, Jesus, he got that poacher's goal. I mean, he does some classy stuff, doesn't he? He's like shimmy. There was a point where he did a hip wiggle and a shoulder drop, and he was cutting through there. Like they weren't. The last time I saw that was Thierry Henry.
Mm. Yeah, no, I did think he had an absolutely fantastic game. I think it was in the commentary or the pundits afterwards said that there was a few chances that he probably could have done better on. But I think he was playing a bit of a deeper role, a bit of a false nine to kind of draw a bit of space out. If he had been in that poaching position the whole game, I think the game would have been way too tight throughout. That was fantastic. I think that was pretty poor goalkeeping from Lloris, which is something that we haven't really seen, to be honest.
Panto season, it's behind you.
We'll take it. But yeah, no, it was super. And that's the kind of, when we think back to last season, when we were that close, I don't think Lacazette would have been in those positions. I don't think Aubameyang would have been in those positions. So it is showing that we are a different level, as Jay mentioned earlier, two, three levels above where we were. So yeah, it was great.
Right, cherry on the cake, Jay. It was 61 minutes. The rebirth of Granit Xhaka just continues, doesn't it? He's an epic player for us at the moment. I don't know what's going wrong. They're singing his name, singing a song for him. He's winning man of the match. Unbelievable. Walk us through that goal, Jay.
Yeah, Martinelli came in from the left and went across sort of the 18-yard line and laid it off to Xhaka, who... I mean, Eric Dier, I think he's still going the other way now, isn't he? Like, and I mean, I don't know what you
can't
guys
stand him.
No, I don't know what you guys thought, but as soon as Xhaka took that touch, I kind of knew he was going to score. He does strike the ball so cleanly, and he's it was always going to go in that far corner. And again, he struck it really well, and another great performance. Xhaka. I mean. We've spoke about him at length. I've never been his biggest fan, but this season you cannot fault him. He's a leader on the pitch. He's very much looked at as a leader from his teammates. And if we had signed him in the summer and he was playing this well, we would be absolutely raving about him. And he looks a bit lighter. He looks a bit fitter, and he looks like he's enjoying his football. He's enjoying the responsibility. I don't know if you saw the team photo today, but he was to Mikel's left, and that's always your vice captain, isn't it? You've captains to your right or vice versa. So great goal. Can I just ask Paul something? When Richarlison was with you guys, like, was he when he left to go to Spurs, what was the feeling amongst the fan base? Because like Richarlison is, he's got the face of a Spurs player, you know, like, he, I don't know if you remember a few
like
years,
a half sucked toppy.
I do want your answer, but there was a few years ago. You remember Robbie Savage when he played for Leicester? Yes. Yeah, everybody hated Robbie Savage other than Leicester fans. And Richarlison is definitely that kind of player. Every team hates him. And I just wondered, what were you guys, because obviously he was a big player for you and he scored a few goals in a difficult season. But I just wondered, were you guys happy that he left or, you know?
Obviously, Jay, in an ideal world, we would have wanted Richarlison to stay. And I think his contributions were surviving last season. It was immense. He scored 6 goals in the last 9 games. And, you know, that got us over the line, definitely. I think most rational and sane Everton fans, and there are a few who do fit that description, would say that you wish them all the best because he stayed with the club. He'd been loyal. He'd been there for 4 seasons. He wasn't agitating for the move all the time. He wasn't, you know, saying he wants to move on to a bigger club. He gave us 4 really good seasons. He kept us up. And from my perspective, you know, I just thought, job done. You know, he's earned a big money move. Personally, I would like to see him gone to Europe rather than the Premier League team. But yeah, I think for most Evertonians, we always appreciate the efforts he made in keeping us up last season and his contribution over the 4 seasons he played for the club. Because, you know, you're right, if you don't support the team he's playing for, he's not a likeable figure, you know, and he gets some unbelievable criticism sometimes, you know, particularly like Jamie Carragher, who knows nothing about football, for going down and tackles and things like that when he's been on the end of some awful challenges. But yeah, so I mean, from my perspective, you know, I wish him nothing but the best because I think he's a really good player and I hope he has a good World Cup as well.
Paul, has he always been that sort of testy, tetchy character as well? Because he looks like he's won a fortune on the lottery, but it cost him a quid, and he's a bit annoyed about it.
Yeah. From day one, he's always been like that. I quite like having an aggressive, narky forward in the team. You know, he's always had. Jay mentioned probably the connect with the fans. Richarlison's always had a fantastic connect with the fans. You know, he's always the first to run over, give his shirt to any of the young kids at the end of the match. And even when the team's not playing well and you're struggling, you can always expect them to kind of dig us out of the hole. I mean, even that last game of the season when we're 2-1. 2-1 down against Crystal Palace, about 15 minutes to go. And he just produced this curling shot to get us back to 2-2. That actually changed the whole tenor of the game. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you either love Richarlison if he plays your club or you hate him if he doesn't. But he's a very, very good footballer. He really is. And the fact he's Brazil's striker and he's actually getting chosen by Jesus at the moment, isn't he? Give you some indication of how highly rated he is there.
Well, it's nice to see he's fitting into the Tottenham pattern, falling over in the box, left, right, and centre. Because, you know, that's Harry Kane's job. That's what he does best. Anyway, let's do some stats. Arsenal, 22 shots. Tottenham, 7. Arsenal, 9 shots on target. That lot, 3. 65% possession for us, 35% for them. 565 passes for us, 307 for them, 90% pass accuracy for Arsenal, 78% for them. Lauren, this front three that we've got now is quite scary, isn't it? It's a really, really good fit, whether it was intended or designed or accidental. Those three are something to be treasured.
Absolutely. I think, you know, at this stage, opposition know just how good Saka is. We see that every game. There's at least 2 players on him all the time and somehow he's still creating chances. I don't understand it. Jesus, again, he's doing everything that we want him to do and more. And I think Martinelli is the unsung hero in that front three. I really think that, you know, almost every game, I think his pass, no, not pass, what was it? His dribbling stats, can't remember them now. I read them this morning on the commute. They're definitely gone out of my head, but they're very impressive. I think he has the most dribbles in the Premier League, if that makes sense.
I thought that was Harry Kane dribbling.
Not from the mouth. But yeah, no, so I think it's really exciting. And I think, you know, injuries, you know, as long as we're okay with them, long may it continue. But in saying that, like, you know, there's some good options on the bench there as well. I'm looking forward to seeing a bit more of Nketiah now with the Europa League games coming up as well, just to see, you know, what he can do, because Jesus is singing his praise at almost every chance he can get. So obviously he's seeing something that he's confident in, which is a nice sign. So yeah, no, it's good. I mean, there's very little to be complaining about as an Arsenal fan right now. And I can't think of the last time we've all said that. So
no, you won't hear us moaning. You hear us crowing a bit. It's interesting you said about Martinelli. He's been involved in 46 sequences of play that have led to Arsenal to have a shot this season. The only player in the Premier League capable of matching Manchester City's Kevin De Bruyne and Mohamed Salah. So it tells its own story, doesn't it? He's a really sharp cookie. And I saw a picture of him the other day where he was like a little boy. He was like a 13-year-old boy. And he's obviously been beefing up in the sort of weights and all that sort of thing, because he looks massive. He looks hench now. Jay, let's get round to picking out some players that really intrigued you and you thought they were worthy of man of the match.
God. Everyone.
There was quite a lot, wasn't there? It was a series of really cracking performances.
Yeah, I mean, Saliba was just... He didn't even have to get out of second gear, did he? He was just
so comfortable. Around,
thrown in a nutmeg, you know, just dribbling the ball. We need him to sign the contract, sharpish. he was superb. I thought, like I said earlier, Ramsdale made a big save right at the start from Richarlison, and that hasn't really been mentioned too much. I thought he was good. His distribution was really good. Ben White was fantastic. Partey, that goal. Xhaka, superb. Martinelli. I think I'm going to go for, just to maybe pick out somebody a bit different, I thought Martinelli, he was just relentless all through the game, and he's been like that all season. And like you said, Tom, he's definitely beefed up a bit. I kind of hope he doesn't get picked for the World Cup. I hope he's, you know, conveniently just left out for somebody else. I'm going to go for Martinelli. They were all superb. Jesus up front was a nuisance. He's so unselfish. And I was so glad to see him get his goal. But I'm going to go for Martinelli.
You just don't know what to do with Jesus, do you? He's just such a handful. Interesting you mentioned Saliba versus Tottenham. 100% aerial duels won. 100% take-ons completed, not dribbled past once, 96% pass accuracy, 11 ball recoveries, 6 passes into the final third, 5 duels won. I'll do a partridge in a pear tree in a minute. 3 tackles made, 3 clearances, Kane and Song in his pocket, and I think that's about right. Nick, let's go with you next. Who stood out for you? Who would you make player of the match?
Yeah, I had a really, really hard time deciding between Saliba, Xhaka, and Partey. I mean, I think I said last time, I mean, we're just a different team when Partey is in the team. We can crank it up a couple notches, and him adding that goal is tremendous. Xhaka just continues to defy everything that I thought he was, and this renaissance he's had is unbelievable. And yeah, like Jay said, Saliba was... We're running out of things to say. I mean, we were worried about the high expectations for him, and I think he has easily surprised everyone somehow. Yeah. Still, I'm going to go with Partey because we've been waiting for that goal, and that really set the tone. And he was just tremendous in midfield. Was so happy to see him on the team sheet because that made me so confident that we're going to take care of business. And he played a huge part in that.
Paul, who was the standout for you? Just don't say a Tottenham player. We're pulled the plug. That's it.
Richarlison, obviously. No, for me, I thought Xhaka was tremendous from start to finish. He was involved in 3 of the goals. He led by example throughout the match. I loved the way as well, after Arsenal's first goal, the way he got all the teams together and huddled, calmed them down, like, let's focus. It's only one goal when you keep going. And I think those derby matches, to me, are won and lost in midfield. If you get control of the midfield, then you're setting yourself up for victory. I thought Xhaka dominated the midfield. I don't think he gave Tottenham a chance. I don't think Højbjerg got a look in against him. So I was just very impressed with his whole performance. And given the background he's come from, when he was a figure of hate almost 2 or 3 seasons ago amongst Arsenal fans, he's really turned that round. I think he's 29 now. And he's played 106 times for Switzerland, this guy. He's a good footballer, so I think, led by example. And you want a player like him for the forthcoming fixtures coming up, because you're going to be crucial to Arsenal's success this season. So, yeah, as from start to finish, in fact, from the first game of the season to the game for the weekend, I've been hugely impressed with his contributions to the team.
Well, I don't think you would have found us crowing about him or 7 months ago.
No.
Myself, Jay, probably Nick as well. I don't know how you viewed Xhaka back then, Lauren, but what about you? Stand out?
Bit boring. I think I'm going to have to go with Xhaka as well. And I always think back to the Euros, what was it, a year and a bit ago, when he captained Switzerland, and he just had this absolute fire in him. And I remember thinking, like, God, I wish we could see that in him in an Arsenal shirt. And we did. And I think, you know, football is such a fickle game at points, and we see that constantly in the Premier League in particular. And I think Xhaka's, you know, fairy tale redemption story, it kind of echoes what Arteta's gone through at the club as well. You know, the amount of hate that he's got. And now, you know, he's, you know, the bread and butter in everyone's eyes. So I think for many reasons, I think Xhaka's story is a lot bigger than just him. And it was much bigger than just, you know, a few goal contributions in a North London derby. So, you know, it's a bit cliche, but I'm going to have to go with him as well.
As for me, I'm going to go for Thomas Partey. Exceptional performance, silky skills, breaking up play, looking to support these strikers up there. And he got that goal. And my God, he'll never score a better goal than that, if he ever scores again. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it?
I think it was his 57th shot from outside the box, I remember seeing.
Well, so we just need to keep going, wait
56 more, and then hopefully we'll get another one.
Right, let's have a look at that scoreline. I'm going to make a prediction for Bodo Glimt out of Lord of the Rings. We're going to do that on for Thursday. We're playing, which is it's come around real quick. It's just manic. Who wants to go first? Jay, puts in the picture. What do you think? Don't go red cards and sending off again, will you, please? The nerds can't stand it.
I don't know much about them, to be honest. So I'm going to go 4.
They're in the top flight.
3-0. Yeah, they must be. They must be.
3-0. 3-0. Yeah, that's good.
Kepia to grab a couple, maybe.
Nick?
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-0. I think this change team just hasn't had a ton of time together, or just a ton of time at all. But I trust at home we should be just fine. Excited to see Marquinhos some more, too.
Mm. Lauren? Come on, you love it. You love
I'm
it.
I'm not
love
confident predicting. In the clean sheet, to be honest. Just, I mean, we haven't seen much of Turner and goal, but I've said before, I'm not 100% confident with him there. So I'm going to say maybe 3-1, 2-1. I'll go 3-1. I'll go 3-1. But yeah, I don't think we'll be keeping the clean sheet, to be honest.
We won't make you predict, Paul, but what do you think? Do you think Arsenal will just cruise past this one? Sounds like a load of gas fitters, doesn't it? And chippies and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, you should do. I mean, one of my friends...
I may really regret this, might I?
I don't think so. One of my friends lives in Belfast. He's a big Linfield fan. So Linfield played Bodo Glimt early on in the competition. So he went to the game there. Yeah, he was quite impressed with them. I think they're actually doing best in the Norwegian league than what you think. I think they're second or third at the moment. So that's. But either way, you know, Arsenal at home, no matter what team Arsenal puts out, should get through that game comfortably. So I'd be, you know, quite disappointed with anything less than like a 2-3-4 goal win.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. It's got to be about 4-0 for me, if to be fair, because the next game comes around really quick, doesn't it? Right, let's have a look at the Liverpool game. That is going to be... It's one test after another, isn't it? It's just one more test. But Liverpool aren't playing that well. Let's just say that. And if you look at their back line, it looks a bit dodgy this season. Virgil van Dijk doesn't seem anywhere near how he was before the injury. I mean, he was a superb player, no doubt, and he's still a top professional. But Jay, how do you see it all going? Do you, I think we've got a really good chance here.
Yeah, I still think it's a really tough game. Absolutely no doubt. They're still a really strong side. And I expect us to, you know, continue where we left off against Spurs. And start the way we have in pretty much every game this season. I mean, we have to be confident. It's a really tough game, though, you know. But score, I don't know.
What's gone wrong, Jay, this season? What's happening limit, down there?
What's gone wrong? I think they may be coming to the end of the, you know, like they're quite an aging squad. The players that they've brought in, you know, especially Nunes, they invested in a lot of money and he hasn't really hit the ground running. He struggled a little bit. I think he got sent off, didn't he?
Against Palace.
Yeah. They obviously, they lost Mane. We touched on this, didn't we, a pod or two back. And they're so heavily reliant upon Van Dijk. You know, a couple of seasons ago when they were defending the title, when he got injured against Everton, and he was out for the majority of the season, they badly fell away. And you know, they heavily rely upon him. You know, against Brighton, I don't know if you saw that game. You know, Brighton could have been about three or four up in the first 15 minutes. And they were quite fortunate in that game.
He's lost some pace as well, hasn't he, Van Dijk? Yeah, I mean, he wasn't the most pacey player, but lost a yard.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players in that Liverpool squad that are very, very comfortable. You know, there's not much, there's not much competition for places in certain areas, I don't think. But they're still a good side. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And they'll pose a real threat. And if we're not on it, they'll, you know, they're good enough to take us apart. So, but we're full of confidence. And I'm sure the atmosphere will be great inside the stadium again. And, it's become a real fortress, hasn't it, the stadium? And the change around in the atmosphere, and there seems to be a lot sort of a younger fan base inside the ground, and that's massively working in our favour. So again, if we win, you know, it's one more tough game. You know, like Paul said, we're getting ourselves into a position where, you know, even a draw maybe won't be a bad result. You know, I'm not saying I want a draw, but, you know, like, we're going to drop points. And I'm not, I just think maybe, you know, to have such a tough game after what was a massive, you know, like a massive game, not just physically, but emotionally, you know, you can imagine a lot was sort of taken out of the players. So to have a game so quick of this magnitude in the league again, it's going to be a real task for Mikel, I think, to get the players onto that level again and get them to be performing at that really high level. But let's, you know, fingers crossed we can get a result.
Nick, prediction from you in a minute, but Klopp has had to do a lot of explaining, hasn't he? Which he never thought possible. He's coming out, he's defending his players and his, you know, his team in general. Who would have thought we'd see them? Where are they in the league? They're about 11th or something, aren't they? Something really shabby. Who would have thought we would see Liverpool in that position after last season and season before?
No doubt. I mean, they brought it to the brink. I mean, those two seasons they didn't win and then won the league. So, I mean, three just heavy, heavy years. And I think that's taking its toll on them mentally and physically. It's just they have, like Jay said, they haven't quite recruited well enough to fully replace these guys yet. I think losing Mane was a huge loss, and they're actually closer to relegation right now than they are to us at the top. So I know the season is young, but that's I think just shows how much they've really struggled. Last time I checked, they were up 2-0 against Rangers, so nice little bounce back for them. Trent had a fantastic free kick, and just reminding me that the quality they have. I mean, Salah hasn't quite kicked off, and they just have those guys that just need half a chance. But that's similar to Tottenham. They don't need too much, and they'll kill you over that. So, yeah, I mean, I totally see what Jay is saying, just the emotional energy that went into the derby. I think hoping the Europa game in between is kind of a nice, and I think we'll rotate significantly. Hopefully everybody. I don't know if we'll be able to rotate everybody, but hopefully almost everybody's rotated. We get a game out of the way and then can go into Sunday with almost a clean slate and hopefully even more confidence. I think, I mean, what a better chance to get a result against Liverpool, which we haven't had in a long, long time, especially in the league. I think, you know, this is about our best chance for a while that we've had, but I just don't know if we'll get over the hump. And I don't know if that's me just being pessimistic because we've had so many results go our way, but I could see a draw for sure. I love that it's at home. I think I definitely don't think Liverpool's as bad as they've been made out to be. They're definitely not what they used to be, but everything's going away right now. The confidence, the squad we're able to pick. I'm going to go with a draw. I'll go 1-1.
1-1, very cautious. Lauren, do you think that there was a bit of complacency when it came to the summer and the transfer window, not really realizing that some of these players had kind of gone past their best?
Maybe. I think we need to remember Liverpool played an awful lot of games last season as well, and we're off the back of a much shorter summer than we usually have. So I think exhaustion is playing a massive role. They've been hit significantly with injuries early on in the season. But we can't forget that pretty early on in the season, people were comparing. There was a debate who was going to be better, Haaland or Nunes. You know, that's obviously out the window now. But, you know, I mean, there's no point talking about that now. Mm-hmm. But that was a topic. That was one of the hot topics of the summer. That's what people wanted to know, who was going to be the better striker. So they did what they thought they needed to do, but it clearly wasn't enough because they hadn't accounted for A, the aging squad, and two, just the sheer exhaustion of players coming off the back of a very hectic season. And I'm sure, I can't think of their full starting 11 now, but I'm sure they'll be hit pretty hard with the World Cup coming up as well. So, you know, I mean, obviously that's a bit in the future. For this weekend, yeah, what I'm most looking forward to is Trent Martinelli, to be honest. I think that could probably be, and I watched the first half of the match as well, Nick, and I saw his free kick. Oof, you know, we don't want to be giving away any opportunities like that for them. It's going to be tough. I think it is going to be tough. Look, what's the difference between Spurs and Liverpool? They can play football. They can play football. They have the capacity to play positive attacking football, but so do we. So I think it's going to be much, much more even match. I think it depends who's going to go out and fight the hardest, you know, because Spurs Arsenal is very, very different. Even United, you know, they have a very, very different manner of playing football. Sorry, I have to say it. For a neutral, it's going to be a great game to watch. Maybe not so much for us. I think we're going to have our heart in our throat for most of it. Prediction, I'm going to be confident about it. I think we can do it. Why not? We're 11 points ahead of them. You know, if not now, then when?
I'm going to go for an exciting 3-2 win to the Arsenal. I think it's going to be one of those games where it's full out war. And then we're just going to do it. I can see Martinelli just kind of rinsing up there on the flank, and also Saka as well. I mean, you know, give these boys credit. Paul, absolutely. You don't give a stuff, do you? Whether they get stuffed or not, do you?
No, I mean,
quite looking forward to it, aren't you?
I am. As long as you win, that's the main thing, definitely. And I think that as long as that kind of indicates this, well, there's never been a better time for.
Oh, Nick's making me look a bit dizzy. Stop for a walk around. Calm down, Nick. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, I think as Lauren's just outlined there, there's never been a better time for Arsenal to play Liverpool. I think, I mean, we played Liverpool in the derby, Goodison, about 3 weeks ago. It was the weakest Liverpool team I've seen play at Goodison for a while. Now, that's partly due to us being better, but they just weren't the same team. And it's one of the few times I sat back in the last 10 minutes of the derby and I said to myself, we're not going to give away a goal here. I don't normally say that when I'm playing against Liverpool. So I think their potency up front is not like what it's been in previous seasons. I think, as Jay outlined, the loss of Mane has been immense and they haven't replaced him. Darna Nunez, seriously? I mean, is he a Premier League player? And Lucas Diaz, you know, yeah, he scores some spectacular goals, but half-time he doesn't know what he's doing when he's got the ball, which is either strength or the weakness, depending on your viewpoints. I think what Arsenal have to do is play on the weakness of Liverpool's defence. Now, when me and you, Tom, spoke to Van Dijk, spoke to Paul Davis.
I would love to.
He said about Virgil van Dijk not being the same player since his injury. Paul went in some detail about the mental effects of injury as well. So I think he's not the same player. He's no longer the so-called world's best defender anymore. Alexander-Arnold. you get the reference, Tom.
I do. Yeah. Musical. Our podcast family will recognize that musical reference. It wasn't bad. Good.
Yeah. Well, Alexander-Arnold, to me, has been the most overrated fullback in British football for years. The lad can't defend. He can't cross us across. He can't tackle. How he's getting this glorified campaign to get him to the World Cup, I have no idea. So if I was Arsenal, if I was Arteta, I'd be hitting the ball with pace from the first minute, put them under pressure, have Jesus buzzing around Van Dijk, close them down, don't let them play the ball out of defence, get Xhaka to impose up the midfield. Because I think for this game, the first goal is crucial that Arsenal get it, because I think if Arsenal get the first goal, they're going to win quite comfortably. What they can't do is concede the first goal to Liverpool. So it's going to be a really entertaining game to watch. I don't see it being a high-scoring game particularly, but I think Arsenal have got enough there to get the 3 points. I think I would go for the 2-1 win to Arsenal. I really hope it's more, but I'd be delighted with a 2-1 win.
I bet you do as well. Guys, thanks ever so much. It's been a brilliant podcast. Sorry, we've had to witter on because it's North London Derby and that's what you do. Yeah, milk it. You give it a severe milking. Just leave you with this before we go. Erling Haaland, he's going to break all sorts of records going, isn't he? The fastest to 3 hat-tricks. In third place, it's Ruud van Nistelrooy. He took 59 games to get to 3 hat-tricks. Michael Owen is in second with 48 games. Erling Haaland, 8 appearances. It's staggering, isn't it? He's going to get, 60 goals this season at this rate? It's phenomenal. And it makes me worry when we come up against them, because that's going to be a real test. That's a baptism of fire. But, guys, thanks ever so much. Brilliant podcast. Thank you very much, all the podcast family, for keep supporting us. And subscribing and pushing up the audio figures as well. Take care of yourselves.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
See you later.
From Nepal to North London, from Delhi to Dagenham, from the terraces to the armchair, it's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Football's in our DNA.
My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Bald Gooner. You can cozy up with Connor at ConnorJack2 on the Twitterverse, and Paul is at PMacCap. Look up Lauren on LaurenD2710. The podcast is on every social media outlet, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon DC of Let's Be Arsenal FC, which is twin to the podcast. Also check out arsedevils.com for opinion and news on all things Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question or take part in the show? It's an Arsenal Thing 4 at gmail.com. A big thanks to all of you who support us, whether you listen or watch. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this, North London is most certainly red. Screaming and hollering, how can this not become